You're listening to the Party in My Plants podcast, and get ready because a mycologist and I are about to bust your mushroom myths faster than you can correctly spell cordyceps. It's C-O-R-D-Y-C-E-P-S, by the way. I always add an unnecessary T. Hey, did you know that maintenance is the most frequently Googled spelling in the state of Missouri? I guess Missourians, like myself, can't grasp that maintenance does not contain the word maintain. Anyway, welcome to the Party in My Plants podcast, where I make healthy living as fun as a party so you'll, you know, actually want to do it and then actually feel, look, and live your best. I'm your host, Talia Pollock. Now let's get this party started. This episode is enthusiastically sponsored by a product that couldn't possibly float my boat more, Four Sigmatic. My boat is so floated by Four Sigmatic's mushroom drinks that any more floating would turn my boat into an airplane because it's flying. Okay, so the first time I tried a packet of Four Sigmatic mushroom tea and a glass of hot water, I was more skeptical because of this whole mushroom thing being really trendy right now, and I'm always reluctant to hop on trend trains. Wow, we're really covering all the modes of transportation here. But I drank those shrooms and I felt truly awesome. It's hard to explain. I just felt way more awesome than I felt before I drank it. Since then, I consistently consume at least one type of shrooms a day, and it helps me know it's going to be bright, 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 sunshiny day, even when it's rainy and gray. Because I am telling you, these mushrooms are magic. Although they don't make me hallucinate in a bathtub like my ex-boyfriend's famous magic mushroom experience, which in hindsight, he seemed way too proud of. But nobody's hallucinating the magical effects of these shrooms, okay? They are ultra scientifically proven to boost immunity and gut health. Yes, please, and thank you. And the four different shrooms that Four Sigmatic uses most, hence the four in Four Sigmatic, wink, wink, they all do different epic things for your bod. Reishi helps you relax. Cordyceps give you a non-caffeinated energy for sports and stuff. Lion's mane, which does not come from a lion's mane, boosts your brain. And chaga is a mega charge for your immune system. I weave all four of those separate mushrooms into my life by way of the teas. That's what I'm talking about here, people, are mushroom teas that you dissolve in a packet of hot water and haya. But I also fancy myself some of their fancier shroom concoctions. They have this relaxing, thanks to the Reishi hot cocoa that I pretty much make every night with almond milk. They have matcha powder, which is the only matcha I now use. They have these magic mushroom chai latte packets that you can add to water or almond milk for a hot or iced, sweetest sippable treat. And I have to say, even though I don't drink coffee, Four Sigmatic is kind of famous for their multiple kinds of organic, much better for you coffee, even mocha mixes. So you can mocha chocolate. Okay, enough from me. I'm sorry. I just finished a mushroom matcha latte and I'm flying high. But because you listen to this podcast, thanks so much for doing that, by the way, you can save 15% off any and all Four Sigmatic shroomy stuff you'll want to buy off of their site, foursigmatic.com, using code PARTYINMYPLANTS. Or you can just go to foursigmatic, foursigmatic.com/PARTYINMYPLANTS to automatically save that 15%, baby. Oh, by the way, did I mention that I don't even really like eating mushrooms? Yeah, but now, thanks to Four Sigmatic, my body doesn't need to have shroom FOMO. Okay, again, hit up foursigmatic.com/partyinmyplants to save 15% on this mega boat floating stuff that I always find stuffed into my pockets, purses, luggage, or my bra because I just can't get enough. In case you missed the memo, I'm a bit of a mushroom junkie. I mean, I drink so much Four Sigmatic mushroom blends that I could turn into a mushroom. Oh my God, I just came up with my Halloween costume. Anyway, given my deep and undying love for the functional fungi, it felt ultra organic to bring shroom extraordinaire Danielle Ryan Broida onto my show. Danielle is hella connected with nature in ways that I am deeply inspired by. She's a raw food chef, an herbalist, a mycologist, a holistic nutritionist, and an avid gardener. Arguably, she's more of a plant partier than me. In this convo, she even says that she became a vegetarian at age 8. She grows as much of her own food as possible. And of all the guests I've had on the show, she has probably come up with the most interesting ways of consuming plants. Hence why I call her a mad scientist. After hearing from Danielle, I bet your butt in mushrooms that you'll be adding all these Harry Potter sounding shroomy spells to your diet. Danielle, thank you so much for coming on the Party of My Plants podcast.
Yeah, I'm so happy to be here.
I feel like you are a plant partier in its purest, rawest, truest form yourself. You are a herbalist, a holistic nutritionist, a mycologist, and a raw food chef. What is a mycologist, by the way?
It's the study of mushrooms. So the science and study of mushrooms, which we're going to get real deep into, I hope.
Yes, I would have called that a shroomologist, but mycologist works fine, I suppose. Okay, so how did you fall so head over heels in love with plants in like every way possible? I mean, like I said, herbalist, nutritionist, mycologist, shroomologist, raw food chef. Like, why? Tell us a little backstory here.
Yeah, there's a lot of different pieces to it, but I became a vegetarian when I was 8 years old, only one in my family. Everyone thought I was crazy. And it really came from it. The reasons have shifted so much over the years, but It came from the realization of what I was eating. And I was like, I don't eat that. And so I my parents were like, we're not going to cook differently for you. So I basically started cooking for myself when I was 8 years old.
What? Where did you grow up? Like in a hippy dippy place or?
Not really. I grew up in California. So
okay, that's quite hippy dippy.
Others. Yeah. And yeah, fell in love with cooking and being food. And the more I learned, people kept asking me, you know, why are you a vegetarian? Why are you a vegetarian? And it kind of started me on this path. And
what did you say? Why were you a vegetarian at 8 years old? Like, I didn't know like what a knife was or a stove at 8, let alone cook for myself.
Yeah, it wasn't the fanciest meals, I'll be honest, but it's definitely evolved. It's been such an organic process, but my reasons have changed so much. It was a lot for environmental reasons. And now it's really all about connection. So I'm not against eating animals or, you know, animal-based products, but I just feel that the connection piece is so important. So being really aware and connected to what you are nourishing yourself with. And for me, I grow as much of my own food as possible, and I'm really obsessed with cooking my own meals and plant-based cooking. So
when you say connection, so you mean connection to the earth, connection to each other, connection to what do you mean by that?
Yeah, all the above. I feel like the biggest issue, if we could distill what's going on in our planet to one word, it would be disconnection. And that's literally from ourselves, from listening to our own bodies and know what's going on in them. And then knowing what tools are available for us to holistically use and heal ourselves, connection to the earth, right? Realizing that we are interconnected with everything, including the plants and the mushrooms, and connection to each other. So really, when we feel part of something, when we feel in tune with both the planet and ourselves and each other and community, it's just, there's so much vitality that comes from that.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I fully agree, but you said that beautifully.
Oh, thank you.
So then tell me, you know, how your relationship with plants has progressed. I mean, like I said, like you really are in deep in a lot of different avenues with plants.
It's true. So from this kind of like plant-based eating at a really young age, I became really into different environmental issues and decided to study environmentalism in my undergrad. And from there, I really wanted to find like environmental science is this huge umbrella. And I wanted to find again, what do people connect with within this umbrella term, right? Climate change, it's so big, energy. And I'm like, everyone eats 3 meals a day. This is something we all do. It's unavoidable. And so I started focusing on things like food justice, so organic agriculture and permaculture, to things like seed sovereignty. So who owns our seeds and where do they come from? And, you know, vocationally, that looked like starting organic farms from old decrepit plots of land in the community where I went to undergrad. And I ended up moving to a intentional permaculture community where it was very living off the grid, you know, harvesting all of our own water and natural building. And there was so many pieces to this lifestyle that felt really good and really connected to the earth. And the biggest thing that was missing in that was the medicine aspect. So when someone would get sick or hurt, there was this little plastic box and it was full of ibuprofen and Band-Aids and these pills, essentially. And I'm like, this is crazy. There's got to be another way. And so it kind of sparked this interest in herbal medicine. And I knew that I wanted to pursue that. And so after my undergrad, I was either going to go straight to grad school for herbal medicine or go travel and head to Asia. I knew Asia was just calling really loud. So I ended up getting a job working for a travel company out in Asia. And I spent 3 years there.
Wow. In Thailand, right? Or just all of it. I read that you led treks in the Thai backcountry.
Yes, it was mostly in Thailand. It was so incredible. All over Southeast Asia and Northern India were my territories, but Thailand was kind of home base. And herbal medicine was such an unexpected bonus to being out there. So I was with hill tribes and they live this very traditional life where they are completely dependent on plant medicine. And so I didn't even really realize how much that would be a part of my trip out there, was going out to the forest and learning about different barks and roots and flowers and working with these hill tribe people to make teas and really see herbal medicine from kind of the truest, most authentic form, where it's still so alive and thriving.
It's like you stumbled, you know, into this world that I know you're currently so passionate about. It's so interesting how your journey literally physically took you there.
I love that term, stumbled into it, because that's honestly how I feel. I try to come up with a really fluid kind of like step-by-step story, and it just didn't work that way. It was really like, okay, I'm stumbling here. And then, you know, after Asia, I fell in love with a man that was from Colorado and it brought me here. And there was literally one of the top graduate schools for herbal medicine down the street from the house that we had chosen from Craigslist when we were in Vietnam and Cambodia.
Is this the Little Yellow Cabin?
Now I'm in a Little Yellow Cabin. That was this really funny apartment was in the middle of downtown Boulder. But it was like a 5-minute bike ride to this herb school. So it was crazy, literally stumbled into it and went to grad school there. I now teach there. I'm the instructor of mycology and still really involved in that crew and community. And same with Four Sigmatic. It was kind of just like stumbling upon it.
It's so cool. I love
so
it.
So organic.
That's perfect. So fitting for you. So fitting. Organic.
Right.
So, Miss Mycologist, then please enlighten us as to the difference between what you call functional mushrooms and, I guess, non-functional mushrooms. I mean, you use the term functional mushrooms, which makes me think that some mushrooms are not functional.
So, zooming out, fungi are their own kingdom. So, this is really important. And actually, they weren't given their own kingdom until the 1960s. So we're still kind of on the brink of so much discovery within the world of fungi, but they're this really vast kingdom. So, right, we're part of the animal kingdom, there's the plant kingdom, and then over here we have the fungi kingdom.
Okay. And are there other kingdoms? Are those
there
the kingdoms?
Are other kingdoms. Yeah. So fungi, all these fungi were actually just thought to be a lower form of plant.
Okay. They were in the plant category, and now they have their own category.
Totally.
Cool.
Yes. You're following. And it's huge. So there's actually 6 times as many species of fungi as all plants on Earth.
Yeah. I remember Taro saying that when he was on the podcast. That's crazy.
Yeah. And as a culture, we typically think of like 3. People tell me,
Portobello.
Portobello, psychedelics, mushrooms, that'll kill you. And it's whoa. Okay, we got to zoom out. There's 6 million species, more discovering more and more by day in this kingdom. So basically, if we break it down super simply, there's mushrooms that grow on the ground, and those are going to fall within those three categories I mentioned, the culinary, psychedelic, poisonous mushrooms. And then what we're talking about is this category called functional mushrooms, which are mushrooms that grow on trees.
Oh.
And there's about 300 that are in this category. And they're essentially mushrooms that have known and studied benefits to the human body.
Cool.
So that's what we mean by functional.
Cool, cool, cool. So this is a different like category of mushrooms.
This
functional.
Is a totally different category.
Got it.
It's so important because they don't look like mushrooms that we think of. A lot of them are these conky, wild looking things that grow on trees. And they don't taste like what most of us think of when we hear mushroom. They don't have an umami flavor. They're usually pretty bitter and earthy.
Mm-hmm.
So think of them as this whole other category.
They're like medicinal mushrooms.
Totally. Yeah. The same mushrooms that used to be called medicinal mushrooms, we now call functional mushrooms.
Oh.
And I think that's because within the plant medicine world, when people hear medicinal now, they think of cannabis. And so now that mushrooms are gaining popularity, people hear the word medicinal and they think psilocybin. And so to draw that distinction, we're using functional so that people know, okay, they're still medicinal to our bodies, but they're totally legal and they have nothing to do with the psychedelic category of mushrooms.
Got it. I love that. And are all functional mushrooms adaptogens?
Yes. So this is a really good segue because it's helpful to categorize different herbs and fungi into what they do. So for example, there's nervines, which support the nervous system. There's a group of what we call carminatives, which are our digestive herbs. And then we have this category, this umbrella category called adaptogens. And all the functional mushrooms that we are going to be talking about and that we use in our four sigmatic products that are the main mushrooms that you'll find in the supplement aisle today, those are all considered adaptogens.
And what are adaptogens?
So adaptogens are essentially herbs and fungi that help your body adapt to internal and external stressors.
It's a very literal name.
Very literal. And we need that because they're a confusing category of natural medicines. They don't have a direct action. They're literally going to be working slightly differently in every body, depending on what your body needs. So they're really working to adapt to essentially the gaps in your own system to help bring you into your highest state of vitality.
Yeah. It's really, really cool. So what are other adaptogens besides functional mushrooms?
Yeah. So ashwagandha, rhodiola, eleuthero, tulsi, there's a really big category. And I'm glad you're bringing this up because not all adaptogens are created equal, right? So even though they're all within this umbrella branch, some are really chill, some are a lot more stimulating, some support more sleep and stress, where others support energy. And so although they all share this quality of being adaptogenic, each one should be looked at like its own human within its own personality. It's like we're both women. You know, we both live in America, but we offer these different things into the world.
Mm.
So similarly with each of the species that we're going to be talking about.
Well, along the lines of that, I feel like it's sometimes challenging or nerve-wracking or stressful or overwhelming for people to make new friends, right? There's all these talks about like, how do you make friends as an adult? You know, tips on making friends. So if we're supposed to meet each adaptogen and sort of get to know their personality and be their friend, if you will, I feel like that could be a little overwhelming for people. So how do you sort of help calm that overwhelm?
Yeah, this is where Four Sigmatic has really done an amazing job of bridging that gap. Our whole philosophy is it is really hard to start anything new or to bring anything new on board, no matter what it is, but especially functional mushrooms.
Like and friends.
And friends. And so what we've tried to do is incorporate these allies, these friends, into habits that we all already have, that we all already do. So we all pretty much have a drink of choice every day, whether it's coffee or matcha or chai. And that's our starting point as a way to just elevate existing habits and make it super simple and natural to bring these things into your life. And it kind of opens the door. So as soon as you add lion's mane or chaga to your coffee, you start feeling a little bit better and you're like, oh, what else can I do? And it's this amazing kind of like domino effect.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Just elevating what's already easy for you.
I remember when Tara was on the show, I spoke to him. This was a long time ago. So I was more new to the shrooms, but still I had probably been drinking them for over a year at that point. Now I'm like a few years in. But I remember saying to him, like, I couldn't identify why, but my body was just yearning for them. And it wasn't a craving because it wasn't like a culinary, like, ooh, I'm craving chai or I'm craving sweet or I'm craving, you know, whatever, chocolate. It was like my body was like, hey, remember that thing that made you feel better, in an unidentifiable way, better, just like stronger or something. Hey, you want more of that? Get more of that.
Yes.
Is that like the adaptogenic effect?
That's part of it. There's also reishi is coming to mind as you're speaking of this, because reishi is known as, it's a mind, body, spirit herb. So It basically taps into, it's not just having a physical sensation, but there is, this is a little bit heady, but there's an energetic component of it as well. And because of this, mushrooms specifically have been revered by so many cultures. Reishi was once only allowed for emperors to take. It was like kings and queens only, because it's so special and sacred. And so there is this unidentifiable magic that they bring, and the way that they've always been used and are intended to be used is every day as a tonic to build and nourish our system. So they're called, you know, tonics of immortality and longevity elixirs and chi of life. You know, they have these like crazy, really sacred names, and your body might have been tapping into the history and the tradition of drinking this every day to build and nourish your system from the root up.
I bet it was. It was totally tapping into that. Royal mushroom.
Yes.
So I'd love to just briefly, because we did dive deep into like the different, the four of the four sigmatic mushrooms, but I'd love to hear from you, a holistic nutritionist and raw food chef, some ways that you like to incorporate these mushrooms into your life and into your diet that go maybe beyond just using Four Sigmatics packets. Because I don't want this just to be a infomercial for Four Sigmatic. I love them, respect them. They're the fucking best. But if people want to get these functional mushrooms in their diets, aside from just, you know, drinking their coffee, what are some ways that you like incorporate reishi? Did you say reishi or reishi?
I say reishi, but you can say either.
Oh, it's like potato, potato.
Yeah.
Reishi. So like, what are some ways that you get like reishi into your diet?
So since you brought up the raw food chef, I have a really good big place in my heart for raw food. And mushrooms are kind of the exception within that world. So They actually do need to be cooked. They need to be extracted in some way for our bodies to be able to access all of that amazing mushroom nutrition and compounds in there.
So that's so good to know. Though I don't think anyone has like, do people ever try to eat mushrooms raw? I've never like seen, oh, well, kind of in salads at like salad bars.
Yeah, and salad bars.
Yeah. I see them there a lot now that I think about it. I'm just speaking out loud. Yeah, totes. Okay. So good to know. Cook your shrooms
always. Yeah, it's really fascinating actually. They have a compound in their cell wall. It's called chitin, and it's the same thing found in lobster shells, in all crustaceans actually. So like shrimp, crab, lobster shells. If you can picture how hardy that is. And it basically acts like this giant door that locks up all of the beneficial compounds from our bodies being able to access it. So that chitin, this door, needs to be broken open. The mushroom needs to be extracted so that all the compounds can be utilized by our bodies.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. So the two big ways to be able to break open that chitin are through hot water. So basically a long tea, we call it a decoction, or through alcohol, through a tincture. So those are kind of the primary ways to get really a potent medicinal dose from the mushrooms. But I cook with, you know, as long as you're cooking with them, so making a stew or a soup, even sauteing for a long period of time, you'll still get the benefit. So every week I go to our farmer's market. I'm super blessed being in Boulder. They sell these gorgeous fruiting bodies of lion's mane. And I get, people give me such a hard time for this, but I get about 5 pounds. They give me a deal. So I get 5 pounds
of
mushrooms a week.
Oh my God.
to eat that pretty much just to myself. So in as many ways as you can imagine, I mean, I just love, you can saute them and add them into, you know, different like abundance bowls, I call them. So whatever you have in your fridge, getting creative with whether it's a grain or different veggies, sauces, and then the mushrooms being one of the staples to at least one of my meals every day.
Is there like a catch-all way to cook kind of all mushrooms? If you just like saute like any of these in, not the ones that'll kill you, but the good, the edible ones and the functional ones, if you just like saute it with a little olive oil and pinch of salt, like, is that like a foolproof way to enjoy mushrooms?
You want to cook it on pretty high heat for as long as possible. So if you're just using some sort of oil and salt, I would also suggest adding a citrus or a vinegar. So I like adding a little bit of lemon or apple cider vinegar, and that assists in breaking down this chitin and making the mushroom more available. But there's only certain mushrooms that cross the line between culinary, so mushrooms that you can chop up and eat. So lion's mane and shiitake would be examples that are both functional and culinary. But others like chaga and reishi, you can't just chop up and cook. You really do need to make a tea out of them. Okay. Or a tincture.
Or by four sigmatics.
Or by four sigmatic, yeah. And then with that, I always tell people, incorporate our powders into whatever you're making. So yeah. I add, you know, our cordyceps elixir into hummus. And our 10 mushroom blend is the base for all of my soups instead of veggie broth. Like, there's so many ways to create meals from those powders as well if you're looking for a mushroom that needs to be extracted via tea or tincture first.
Very, very cool. This is so helpful. Oh my God, I'm so lit up. Okay. So what about mushrooms that you just find like at the grocery store? Like, you know, the portobellos, the shiitake. Oh no, you said shiitake is functional. Mm-hmm. But portobellos, like baby bell, whatever the other ones are, I don't even know the difference. Are those just mediocrely helpful to your, you know, well-being? Are they just like meh? Or, you know, are the functional ones basically are like a different, like you said, like a different species, a different category, right? The other ones are, the culinary ones are more just like whatevs.
Let's put it this way. I would say a portobello mushroom is going to be your romaine lettuce, and your functional mushrooms are going to be your kale and chard and organic arugula.
I love that. Oh my God. So good. So good. This is so fun. I love that. Okay. Are there any mushroom misconceptions that you've come across that you want to, you know, put out there right now? I know you talk a lot, you educate a ton about shrooms. So are there anything that comes up that people always say and you're like, no, that's wrong?
There are so many.
Oh, I think I was like, maybe she won't know any. Maybe this is a dumb question.
Where do we start?
Oh boy.
The first is the idea that mushrooms can be eaten raw. So we've kind of dispelled that already. I mean, I'm a raw foodie in a lot of ways. I eat things cooked now as well. But okay, we've dispelled that myth. People are really afraid of mushrooms. So people hear the word fungi, and so much of the time their first thought goes to black mold and moldy cheese and this really dark kind of negative association with fungus. Mm-hmm. And I just want to dispel the myth that functional mushrooms have anything to do with black mold growing in your shower.
So you're saying if I don't just like not clean my shower for a year, I'm not going to just grow like lion's mane. That's not how it works.
Correct. Okay. Definitely not how it works.
Good to know.
Really good to know. Yeah. And the functional mushrooms are actually, sounds bizarre, but they're some of the most powerful antifungal natural medicines that we have. So if you think about in the animal kingdom, animals have to fight and defend themselves against other animals. Similarly, within the fungi kingdom, functional mushrooms have to defend themselves against other dangerous fungi. And so because we as humans share about 40% of our DNA with mushrooms, we can actually use these functional mushrooms and basically ingest them. And then we get the same benefit to our body and are able to fight off fungal infections by using these fungi.
Wow. That's so cool. That's a good metaphor to the animals, you know, fighting other animals.
Yeah.
You've done this a few times, haven't you?
I've done this a few times. I just calculated it. I'm like 30 mushroom lectures a week.
Oh, what? Is that serious?
That's so serious.
Oh, to who?
So I'm our national educator. So I basically have the entire U.S. to inspire and excite about shrooms.
No pressure.
So constantly, no pressure at all. Yeah, I was just in Florida last week and then Texas. I'm heading to New York and Baltimore this week and basically just book up my days with whoever, accounts and lectures.
Anyone that'll listen to you preach the mushroom gospel.
Pretty much.
Oh,
yep.
My God, that's amazing. Quick little interrupt here, and don't fast forward because you will love this free thing. I have compiled a list, a free list, which you can download at partyinmyplants.com/booklist, one word, book list, that contains every single book recommended by or written by the guests of my podcast over the past 3 years. I wanted to make it easy as apple pie for you to eat up the words from all of the books that my guests over the past 150 episodes have said will inspire you in some awesome way. So I made you this free list with all of them. Go snag it at partyinmyplants.com/booklist and get your eyes feasting on healthy for your head stuff. Or listen to the audiobook so you can get your ears feasting on it too. Your ears absorbing it, right? Okay. Anyway, again, the list is at partyinmyplants.com/booklist. Did I mention it's footy? Okay, well, that's a perfect little segue into what I wanted to talk about also is just how to use mushrooms and herbs because you are an herbalist too. So I don't want to just, you know, turn our backs to all the other herbs, but how you use these to like survive modern life, you know, like and thrive. So I didn't realize how much you travel. You travel so much based on what you just said. I know you're very active. You climb, you hike, you ski, you live in Colorado, you do all that stuff. But how do you use these mushrooms and herbs and stuff to really help you stay well while you're traveling so much?
Yeah. So this is so crucial when traveling.
I had no idea you travel that much. I like really thought you lived like in your little yellow cabin, like all zen. I don't know. I'm surprised to hear somebody so grounded and so well on the road so much. It seems very...
ironic.
Yeah, and just counter whatever the word is.
Yeah, I do split my time. So I'm here in my little yellow cabin about 50% of the time and on the road the other 50% of the time. And we need allies, like going back to this idea of, mm-hmm. of having friends with the plants and the mushrooms. But we can't do anything on our own without, or I certainly couldn't stay well and healthy and vital without the support of all of these different allies. So I like to think of mushrooms specifically as building what I call our vital reserve. So if you think of a city having a reservoir, that's how I like to think about our bodies having their own reservoir. And I call that our vital reserve. And what specifically functional mushrooms do is they build and nourish that vital reserve. So whenever I'm exposed to different antigens or stressors internally or externally, I basically have this pool to pull from so that I can respond and recover quickly to whatever comes my way.
Hmm. Fascinating. Okay. So the mushrooms are the ones that just keep the whole system flowing and well, and you have this reserve to rely on when things, you know, are on the outside are a little funky.
Yeah, and it's really preventative. So it's getting them on board before you actually need them. Mm-hmm. So to really like nourish and kind of grow this strong foundation so that you can react to whatever comes your way in the world in an appropriate way. And the mushrooms, yeah, are a big part of it. And then there's so many other, I mean, we're talking like holistic wellness, right? They're a piece of the puzzle, mm-hmm. but when I'm on the road specifically, it's like, how can I basically mirror my routine as much as possible when I'm home as when I'm on the road? So as challenging it is, waking up and meditating and going on runs and finding time to do yoga. And as soon as I get to a new location, I go to a supermarket and get whatever foods I can for the week, because I often have a challenging time eating out in random cities across the country that, you know, gluten-free and dairy-free and all these things that we often subscribe to and can find places to eat in, you know, Boulder, LA, New York. That's not the case in the rest of the country. So focusing on whole foods and being nourished, having enough sleep. I mean, there's so many pieces to the puzzle that enable you to kind of step forward as your best self every day. So
are there herbs outside of mushrooms that you rely on? I mean, I know mushrooms aren't herbs. So are there things outside of mushrooms that you put in your body? Like, I'm leading you to magnesium, which is something we spoke about via email. So for everybody to know, we had scheduled this 2 weeks ago and I bailed at like the last minute, the last hour, because I just wasn't feeling well. And I said, I want to be my best self for this interview, or you wouldn't be your best self and the listeners wouldn't get their best, you know, information. And so I asked if we could reschedule and you kindly said yes. And then you asked what was wrong. And then I told you, and then you suggested magnesium as one of the many things you suggested. And then we had a long, passionate discussion about magnesium and how you call it the relaxer, and just talk to us about magnesium, because I love it and you love it too.
I do love it. Magnesium is the number one nutrient deficiency in Americans, which That's makes crazy. Sense when we call it the relaxer and then we think about the state of the country.
Boom. Let that sink in. Wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. We're wound up and we're stressed and we're literally on a cellular level missing this nutrient. I mean, magnesium is responsible for over 500 functions in the body, but you can think of it as relaxing. So whether it's an Epsom salt bath, right, after a long day of exercise, or to help with digestion and easing things in that way, or for headaches, it helps our bodies relax and unwind on a cellular level.
Yeah.
And that's so crucial for so many of us. And sometimes we think we have all these issues, and you bring really simple things. You replenish yourself with what you might be deficient in, and you start to function your best. So magnesium is such an important place to begin. And then it's totally body dependent, right? So my body is going to need something different than your body. And even at different times of seasons or different times of the year, we're going to be needing different things, right? Vitamin D is a really good example of that. Like in the winter months in Colorado, even if you're outside, because of our altitude, our bodies can't get vitamin D from the sun. And so I have to supplement it with vitamin D throughout the winter months.
Right.
But for someone that lives in California, that might not be the case. So it's like looking at your body, what is going on with you, and then choosing the right, whether it's supplements or so many different herbs that are available to basically support us through all these changing times, whatever it might be that we're dealing with.
What's one of your favorite herbs for boosting your energy? I mean, I think that's an interesting one, because when people think of boosting energy and, you know, stamina, you think of caffeine, right? You think of green tea or coffee or whatever. But I'm sure there's, you know, I mean, I even know cordyceps is one of the functional mushrooms, and that's supposed to be really good for boosting your energy and stamina. What are some other ones you rely on?
Yeah, cordyceps is so awesome. I love, we'll just do a little plug there, because there's no stimulant, right? So not only
that's
caffeine,
what I meant. Yeah, stimulants. Yeah. Oh, wait, what's the difference between stimulant and caffeine?
So caffeine is a type of stimulant.
Got it.
Yeah. So stimulant umbrella category, and then caffeine is, it falls within that. But yeah, cordyceps gives us this natural sense of energy by oxygenating our bloodstream. So we feel greater energy without propping us up, which is so cool. But one of my favorite herbal adaptogens that doesn't fall into the functional mushroom category for energy is this really cool, it's actually a succulent, and it's called rhodiola. Have you heard of rhodiola?
I've definitely heard of rhodiola, but I don't know why. I mean, I guess just because of my line of work.
Yeah. Well, it is an adaptogen, and I hope it gains more popularity, but it's this really tough, hardy, tiny little succulent that grows in some of the toughest climates on Earth. So from Iceland to Siberia, Canada, Scandinavia, even Mongolia. And it was actually traditionally used by Vikings to support energy during really long, cold winters. And so if you think about, there's this thing called the doctrine of signatures. So the way that a plant looks or where it grows, and that giving us clues into what it will do for our body. So think of this little tiny succulent that is so hardy, growing in some of the toughest climates and sustaining Vikings,
yeah.
And throughout winter, like what it can do for our bodies on a daily basis to support physical energy and endurance, productivity. It's kind of a hidden gem.
Wow. How do you consume it? Where do you get it?
So it depends. You can get it through most of our natural food stores or supplement aisles. There's also a lot of places for bulk herbs that I suggest. So you want to use the root when you're using rhodiola. And there's some great online sources, or if you have apothecaries in your area, they'll usually carry it. Places like Star West Botanicals or Mountain Rose Herbs, you can order bulk rhodiola root and then just put it in a pot of water on your stove and heat it up for 20 to 30 minutes and drink it like a tea.
Hmm. I feel like that's a good way to drink all, to consume a lot of this stuff is via tea form. Like, sounds like everything has to be heated for the most part.
Yeah, a lot of these herbs have to be heated. The tougher ones, so essentially if you think of all plants, you can make tea with most of our plants, right? And if you think of things above ground, so your, you know, stem or flower or leaf, those are what you can make an infusion with. So that basically means just boiling hot water and then pouring it over your tea, like a typical tea bag. And then when you're talking about things below ground, so roots or even some barks, functional mushrooms fall in this category. That's where you make what we call a decoction, which is also a form of tea, but it means that the heat is continuously kept on that pot of water for a period of time.
Hmm. It's like concoction, but decoction.
Exactly. They're both concoctions. This is all witchy stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just to extract in the most potent way possible. It's like, how can we get the most from these little plant allies of ours?
Very cool. What's one of your favorites for like herbs or shrooms for recovery? You know, after intense workout or, you know, intense work day, what's really good for helping our bodies like repair, you know, when we're relaxing? I know magnesium's great for that. Anything else you rely on?
Yeah. One of my favorite herbs is Tulsi or holy basil.
Is that the same thing?
It's the same thing. Yeah. So within the world of plants and mushrooms, there's a Latin name, and that's consistent throughout any country you're in. So for Tulsi, it's Oximum Sanctum. And then people have all these common names that they slap onto that plant based on where you are in the world. So, you know, Reishi, that's actually only one name for the mushroom itself. We brought her up earlier. Queen of mushrooms, like Lingxi in Chinese medicine. But yeah, so there's all these common names. If you're really trying to get like the real, take that one deeper dive into herbalism, learn the Latin names and you'll know for sure that you're getting the right plant.
Got it.
But Tulsi, common name for Oximum Sanctum. It's a type of basil. It's in the mint family. And I have a really deep love for Asia, as we touched on. And Tulsi is this really sacred plant in Ayurveda, which is the traditional Indian medicine. I was just in India in July, hiking in the Himalayas.
Oh my God, your life.
Magical. Well, that was my first vacation in over a year. So
okay,
it's not
fine.
That.
But still, it was magical. Pretty sweet.
But there was Tulsi growing. So I feel like because I've been exposed to Tulsi so much recently, she's coming up as the main plant I'm highlighting. But growing abundantly on these trails. And I was hiking with 25 Indian people, which was awesome. And they really revere Tulsi. So it's actually put on a lot of altars in India.
Oh, wow.
It's called like Matchless or the Incomparable One. And pretty much in every Indian home, you'll find a pot of Tulsi. And kind of like Reishi is the mind, body, spirit mushroom, Tulsi is the mind, body, spirit herb.
Cool.
And so super supportive for stress and balancing, harmonizing our mood and our energy. So really great kind of recovery, end of day, nourishing, sweet little herb.
Mm, yeah. And I know, I mean, I see Tulsi tea in the store all the time, like just in regular grocery store.
Yes.
Do you support the consumption of that or does it need to be like pure and, you know, from India?
big support, big support.
Okay, cool. Phew.
Whatever way it's going to be convenient. I used to tell my clients, I had a private practice for a lot of years as an herbalist, and I would say the medicine doesn't work if you don't take it. So what's going to work for you, and get it in that form.
Well, I was going to ask you, does the medicine work if you do other bad stuff with your body? Like, you know, can somebody be eating French fries and all this crap food and not moving their body and thinking shitty thoughts and having clutter and all these other things, but if they're drinking their shrooms, like, they're good to go? Or, you know, how much can they overcome in your life, I guess, is what I'm asking. Like, do you really need to do the other stuff first and then you can be advanced with the herbs and the mushrooms? Or can the herbs and the mushrooms be like the gateway to leading to other stuff?
They can definitely be the gateway, but it depends on where you're at in mm-hmm. your life and your stress. So sometimes it's always like, how can we just meet ourselves and meet each other where we're at? So sometimes, you know, I would be working with my practice focused. I mostly worked with autoimmune bodies and chronic illness. And a lot of times people weren't ready to bring herbs or mushrooms on board. They were like, whoa, that's super foreign. I can't go there yet. So sometimes my protocol would be like, drink a glass of lemon water every day for the next week, or add one serving of berries into your diet for the next 2 weeks. Like, where are they at? Or, you know, go to bed 15 minutes earlier than you would have.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, there's different gateways, but it depends on what you're ready for, and you'll know in your own body. But they do offer a really great bridge into a world of greater health and vitality. I just thought of this story that I haven't thought of for a while. There was this one client, and he ate McDonald's every day, wasn't ready to change anything, didn't want to add anything into his
diet. Why was he paying you?
Yeah, right. Luckily came to an herbalist, but it was like really baby steps. And the one thing that we had him do was, we're like, okay, instead of, he would eat his McDonald's on the way, like while driving to work or wherever he was going. And so we're like, okay, instead of eating it while you drive, just stop. So pull over, sit on a park bench, even sit in your car, but don't be distracted while you eat it. So just, you know, kind of connect, going back to where we started, connect to your food. And that was it. And that was his first protocol. And after a week of doing that, he was like, his body didn't want it anymore. It was the first time he had like looked and, you know, take mindfulness, really taken the time to taste and feel what he was nourishing himself with. And so it's like amazing, the tiniest baby steps wherever you're at, to shift. It's a mindset shift too, of choosing, okay, I'm taking, even if it's like the tiniest little baby inch forward, but you're taking the moves and starting the path to a life of greater wellness.
So cool.
Yeah. So cool.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, wherever you're at, you can take steps forward.
Yes.
No matter what. That's awesome. Well, speaking of steps, as I was envisioning you hiking through the Himalayas, like you just said, I was really curious, what was like in your backpack? What little shrooms or herbs or snacks did you have while you were hiking?
Yeah. Chaga is my favorite travel ally ever.
Okay.
So I like to call chaga like your daily bodyguard. Mm-hmm. So it's this idea. Chaga is super full of antioxidant properties, which is so important when you're traveling and exposed to all sorts of foreign things. So yeah, chaga is always in there. I have a little herbal first aid kit that I prepare.
So
we should have like a unboxing of the herbal first aid kit. Like charcoal is super important. I did get food poisoning. Lavender essential oil is one of my favorite herbs. That's one of the few essential oils that you can put directly on your skin, and it's the best ally for sunburns.
Mm.
So I have that in there. And then I like herbs that have dual purposes. So things like peppermint or catnip that are both digestive aids, but that can also help you if you get a respiratory condition, or can also help your nervous system if you can't sleep at night. So when you have, you know, like minimal room, how can you find things that have multiple functions?
Oh my God. So cool. So with the peppermint oil or the catnip, do you put that in water? How do you use that to help you sleep and digestively?
Yeah, I make a tincture out of it, which is a really easy way for travel. When I'm home, I'll usually do a tea, or there's lots of steams. There's so many creative ways to use herbs, oils. But when you're on the go, tincture is kind of the most potent. So basically an alcohol extract.
How do you make a tincture?
So
can you describe it? Is that possible?
Sure. Okay. The first method is super simple. So basically with every herb that you're using, there's a different ratio of water and alcohol to extract whatever compounds from the plant matter that you're trying to get. So if you do fresh plants, that's the easiest way because there's already a high water content in there. And you want to grind up the plant to have as much surface area exposed. That's going to create the most potent final product. So it used to be with the mortar and pestle.
That's what I was just envisioning. I'm like, I was just going to say, so you use your mortar and pestle?
I do. I love my mortar and pestle. I also love my Vitamix. We're 2019.
You're like a mad scientist over there.
Oh.
This is so fascinating. Okay, so you put it in your Vitamix, just like a fresh herb?
Yeah, just like a fresh herb. So you can get some like peppermint, fresh peppermint, even from the grocery aisle. You can put it in your blender and cover it with, you want a really high percentage alcohol. So the kind of poor man's way to do that is with Everclear, like something that you could
like
get.
Like we're talking about like drinking, like liquor, not like rubbing alcohol.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. Everclear.
So like Tito's.
Yeah, exactly. but you want to get as close to 100% as possible. So what I do is order bulk, basically like super potent. Think of like moonshine, essentially. Oh my God. You want it to be as clean as possible so that you can basically extract as much of the constituents from the herbs as possible into that alcohol. So yeah, you can really just put your peppermint in your blender if it's fresh and then pour your alcohol over it and blend it up. And then you want to make sure that the alcohol is covering the plant matter. And then you put it in some sort of, you could use a mason jar, any sort of glass jar, and you let it sit for ideally like 2 to 3 months.
Whoa.
Yeah. This is a long extraction process.
Got to plan ahead.
You got to plan ahead. There's other ways. We could do like a medicine making podcast. There's other ways to do it.
I would love to do that.
Yeah. We need a video too.
No, we have to. Well, you come to New York a lot, you said. So next time you come, maybe we can, or sometime that you come, we'll have to do a video because I need to see this.
I'm so down.
Okay.
So yeah, you let it sit and then you strain it out. And that's your final product will be your super potent, fresh folk peppermint tincture.
And so how do you then use that IRL? What do you do with it?
You take it on your tongue. So if you think of like a tincture bottle grocery store, you literally, I mean, the dosage is going to be slightly varying per body and what you're using it for. But yeah, you take like 3 dropperfuls as kind of a standard dosage a day to support, you know, whatever it is that you chose the peppermint for, be it respiratory or digestion or nervous system, relaxation, sleeping.
Oh my God. And so you just put that in your mouth or in water and then your mouth.
Yep, mouth or water is the best way.
Wow. And just to play devil's advocate, why wouldn't someone just like buy that?
You could totally buy that.
But you like love it. Like it brings you joy to do that.
For me, there's something so powerful about making your own. It's like a home cooked meal versus going out. They both have their benefits, but the more, you know, knowing where your medicine comes from. This is like really heady and going to
be
like
do it.
Bolder, but there's an aesthetic piece too, that you can really feel the difference in your body from a homemade tincture that you have grown and cared for this plant and raised it and harvested it and created the medicine with it. And there's a greater sense of potency and a feeling that comes from that, that I really value. But you know, you could get your medicine from a friend
or you just buy it off Amazon. No, just kidding. No, that's exactly what I'm trying to shift my life into right now. I think I might have mentioned to you, my husband and I are buying a house and we're moving into the woods and we're so excited. And I really am just yearning to get more connected to nature and my food and eat out way less. And so this is going to be something that I definitely try for sure. Do you have any advice on how one, myself, might set up my first garden and what like a great first herb to grow is? I mean, because according to Instagram, your garden includes lavender, comfrey. Is that how you said? comfrey, chocolate mint, sage, lemon balm, raspberry, calendula, arugula, onion, cilantro, basil, chives, green onion, romaine, tomatoes, cabbage, cucumber, celery, squash, kale, yarrow, and five big rose bushes.
It's so
Does
perfect.
That ring
I'm
a bell?
Out in my garden right now as we're chatting. So I'm like looking
Did
around.
Did I miss any?
Everyone's getting a shout out.
You guys, you made it. Okay. Yeah. So somehow, in addition to all your traveling, you are a master gardener.
Oh.
Spark notes, quick, you know, what if I want to be a gardener? I've never gardened. What do I do to start?
Yeah. So indoor or outdoor, we'll decide first. And then
outdoor.
Outdoors. Great.
Well, I don't know. So, what do you like better? What do you recommend?
Well, it depends. Some you will bring indoors, like rosemary. I have indoors through the winter, but then plant outside in the summertime. And so it depends on your climate, but probably the easiest, let's say like three herbs that are pretty medicinal to start with.
Okay, good.
That are so simple to grow good. Are herbs in the mint family.
Nice.
So, and there's so many awesome herbs in there. Yeah, I have chocolate mint because I think it tastes awesome.
Yeah, I've never even heard of that.
Oh my gosh. You have to come over and I'm like, can I just pick you off a little leaf right now and have you chew it up through the Skype?
Does it just taste like not a thin mint. What are those candies that like they give out at restaurants in bowls?
Yeah.
What are those called?
It tastes like those.
I forget what they're called, but those like they're chocolate mints.
Yeah, we're going to think of the name. But yeah, so mints, I mean, lemon balm is in that family, which lemon balm is an amazing nervine antidepressant. Mm-hmm. So many mints just grow like crazy. So you want to make sure it's in a pot because if you put it in a garden bed, it'll take over everything. But
that's
really
so good to know. Okay.
Yeah, starting place. Calendula is awesome. So it's in the marigold family. They're those bright orange flowers.
Pretty.
And if you've ever gotten natural skincare, you'll usually see calendula in it.
Yeah, it's in my face moisturizer that I use every night, and I never can pronounce it. I'm always like, I forget what I say. Now I know how to say it. Calendula or something I was saying for a while.
Oh my God. Yeah, calendula. And it's a tissue healing herb. So amazing topically, right, for skin, but also internally. I use it in every one of my gut formulas. So to help repair and regrow, if you think of cases of like leaky gut, really powerful to tonify the tissues within the gut lining as a tea. So calendula, it's beautiful and really easy to grow and great. Talk about like dual purpose, creating, you know, growing herbs that you can use for so many different things. Calendula and mint both fall into that category. And then yarrow would be my third. And yarrow is super cool. Its Latin name is Achillea millifolium. And so it's known as Achilles plant. Mm-hmm. And its original use was as a styptic, which means it stops bleeding. So if you think of Achilles as a warrior and he would get these battle wounds, and you can take some of the yarrow and make a poultice. So basically grind it up and make like a paste and then put it on any sort of cut and it will stop the bleeding right away.
Oh my God.
But really cool. It's often called a medicine cabinet in and of itself. So really powerful. It basically has different uses and actions on the body when it's drank hot versus when it's drank cold, when it's in water versus when it's in an alcohol, when it's used dried, like right on as a poultice versus fresh. So really great. I use it as a woman for premenstrual cramps and tonification of the uterus. Is one of my favorite ways to use yarrow as a tea. But yeah, there's so many. It's also beautiful and the bees love it. Like as many pollinators as we can get in our gardens.
Mm-hmm.
Bring them on. So mint, calendula, yarrow. Those are my starting three for you. And I'll send you some. I have lots of seeds for you to get you started.
Thank you. Where can everyone buy seeds if they're not as so lucky to be friends with you like I am?
Oh, that is a great question. There's a couple like Farmer's Almanac and some pretty classic like seed places, but support your local apothecary if you have one. So go to your local gardening store, herb store, health food store. And that's always, we got to keep these mom and pop shops in business that are providing the good stuff.
Oh, you are so cool. And I could talk to you all day. And I know you have to go. But I want to just say, it sounds like really the summary of this is that, like, because as you're talking, I mean, the fact that you're like making your own tinctures and pastes and growing, like, it sounds like, and going back to the beginning, like, you're just all about connection and how the more we're connected to the stuff we put on and in and around our body, just the better we'll be. Would you say that's like the thesis of this conversation and like who you are as a human?
I was just going to say, I feel like that's the thesis of my life.
Perfect. Then I did well.
You did great. Oh, it's so fun chatting with you. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, thank you. And then tell everybody where they can stay connected with you.
So social is the best way. Danielle Ryan Broida is my Instagram. I have a website, Danielle Ryan Wellness. And then if you want to learn more about my work with the mushrooms, then head over to Four Sigmatic.
Woo. And you just told me that Four Sig is opening, is it a pop-up shop or like a permanent shroom shop here?
It's a permanent shroom shop.
Okay.
It's called the Shroom Room. And we have one brick and mortar store in LA, and this is going to be our second one. So coast to coast. Amazing. And it's a place where everyone can go and drink free mushroom beverages.
I didn't know it was free.
Yes.
Wow. Okay. And that's in the Essex Market, which is right on the other side of the Williamsburg Bridge, right? Where the Trader Joe's is down, you know, in that area.
You know better than me.
Okay. Telling you guys, that's where it is in New York. And in LA, it's on Abbot Kinney, right?
Correct. In Venice. Yes. California.
Sick. So we might be able to see you there too.
Yes, please.
If people are so lucky. All right. Thank you so much. This was so fun.
Yeah. Thank you. Talk soon.
Okay.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to the Party in My Plants podcast. See why I have so much room in my heart for fungi and for herbs and for all the gloriousness Mother Nature has to offer us. And also see why I still have much of my own knowledge and experience to gather about said Mother Nature's offerings. This is definitely an episode whose show notes with Danielle's advice for making tinctures, starting a garden, and whipping up favorable fungi you're going to want to eat up. So visit partyinmyplants.com/163.